You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show this week in WordPress and Tech. So in this show, we've got a great WordPress entrepreneur. Now he works for Automattic. We've got Mike Scott. Mike is well known in the WordPress community. He started a number of successful plugins, started with Social Gallery, then started the plugin and theme shop Epic, and also was involved in Zero BS CRM, which was sold to Automattic in 2019. So we're going to be talking about all things marketing. Is it worth even thinking about online marketing with the age of AI? And a load of other subjects about building successful businesses in the WordPress space. It should be a fantastic discussion. So, Mike, would you like to give us a quick additional, like 10, 20 seconds intro, and then we'll talk more in detail about your history in the main part of the show?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Mike. I'm based in Manchester, UK, and it's actually sunny for a change here. So I'm normally staring into grey skies, but now I've got a bit of like winter sun, well, spring sun, like dazzling me a little bit. Worked in WordPress and around WordPress since about 2010. But prior to that, I was actually a pensions consultant at PricewaterhouseCoopers. So one of those little known facts that people do not know. I qualified as an actuary, and on the side of doing that, I was building side businesses and quit my 9-to-5 in 2016 to go all in on WordPress. So that's a very short synopsis.
That's fantastic. And I've got my ever-patient co-host and individual of reason and light. I've got my co-host, Kirk. Kirk, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Manana No Mas. I also work directly with Jonathan at WP Tonic and his team, and the great folks at Lifter LMS, all over WordPress.
Poor old Kirk, he's become my unofficial therapist. There we go. should be a great show. I've been looking forward to this particular chat. But before we go into the meat and potatoes of the show, I've got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. Also want to point out, we've got a fantastic free resource for you. We've got some great, yummy special offers from the sponsors, plus a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services for particular areas, all listed in a nice list, all recommended and used by the WP Tonic team. It's a great resource. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved WordPress professionals? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get from that page. I'm not doing that on the round table show, beloved tribe, because Spencer keeps interrupting me. So I'm not going to bother it. But you seem to still like it, my beloved tribe. So let's go straight into it. So Mike, they got into WordPress, you know, what was it about your former career before your WordPress career that you thought that WordPress was going to be so much better?
Oh, good question. So I actually, when I worked in pensions, I did a, so we spent a lot of time in like human resource services, like trying to help people be like manage their employees better, look after the benefits of the high earners and all that sort of stuff. And I did a lot of work with Excel, and a lot of the like the younger associates that were coming in, even the managers weren't very good with Excel. And I came from like a computer university background where I was just picked up Excel. I could do all sorts of stuff in like VBA programming at the time. And so I thought, well, why not I do this as a side gig? Like there must be other companies like out there that struggle with Microsoft Excel at the time. And this is, oh gosh, probably 2010 time. So I was just writing pages in HTML and created my logo. I can't remember what I created the logo in. And then tried to do like headers. And then I'm like, oh, I need an about page. So then I'd have to go back into every single like .html to then like add an extra link to all of those. And then at a certain point, I'm like, right, I'm going to need a blog. And then it just got real. I'm like, how do I do this with HTML and CSS? So did some Googling. WordPress came up as like the only choice really as blogging software at the time. So I learned that. I set it back up on WordPress. So it was a lot easier to start adding content, start adding things like forms, all the type of stuff you want if you're trying to get leads into your failure of an Excel business. My domain was actually excel-lens, so excellence.info. So it was .info domain. I knew nothing about websites at the time, and that's how I got started there. Fell in love with WordPress, started using it a lot, and started having a lot of other side business ideas. So when I decided to leave PwC in 2011, I then went back into insurance and life insurance. And we had a 3-month notice period where you put on gardening leave. So you couldn't work on clients. So you didn't like take your knowledge to another consultancy. But my senior manager at the time said, why don't you like write an ebook on how bad you are at Call of Duty? So I'm like, fine, I'll do that. Wrote the ebook, and it was 101 tips to get worse at Call of Duty, put it on Amazon. And that was sort of like my first online dollar, so to speak. So that went on to probably sell about $3,000 in its lifetime over back in 2011. I had the crazy thought that, you know, I can do this better than Amazon. So I used a WordPress website to become a social ebook store, installed BuddyPress, started to build a community of members there. And then one of the authors of that site said, look, I'm doing a new book. I've got like 5 different book covers. I want to have a gallery on my like author page, and people click it and it open up like Facebook. And it didn't exist, and I didn't know how to do it. So I put a job post up on a freelance board, and a freelancer called Woody like applied for the job. And he said, it's probably going to cost about $1,000 to build it. I'm like, I've not got that. Like, no one's buying the ebooks from my failed bookstore. So we did an agreement where he built it for free. And we sort of split the proceeds, put it on Cold Canyon. And that was our first like bigger success, because that took off quite well as a Cold Canyon product. It got us elite authors probably in 2013. And at this point, then I was like, I like this as a...
And that's when you got the taste for building pro plugins and other products on WordPress. That's where it started, really, Mike.
It did. So it started with, I'd not done a lot in PHP type coding at the time, but I'd done a lot in, like, say, VBA and MATLAB, like, when throughout my sort of degree. And then I saw I can make money with premium plugins. So then alongside, I kept in touch with Woody at the time, and we built a lot of, like, we had little challenges where, like, I tried to release a plugin, he released a plugin, and we tried to see which would be best.
I think we'll leave it there, because we're starting to overlap into the next question, and I want to give that to Kirk. So, Kirk, over to you.
Yeah, noise.
Well, Mike, I was listening to your answer, and I was just trying to put myself back in that headspace, because I started working with WordPress in 2004, And as you were talking, I was like, the guy wants a gallery that opens up into Facebook and does that. And I'm like, and you're like, it didn't exist. And I'm like, oh my God, he's right. It didn't. And I think about where we're at now, right? So now we've got 60,000 plus things in the repository to choose from, right? Like WordPress does all this crazy cool stuff. So looking at where we were and where we are, like, what do you think are the major lessons that you've learned in launching a commercial plugin in a way that you could share it with our audience that might be thinking the same thing? Because things have changed a lot since inventing something that's needed.
Absolutely. So I think it'll always be for me, like with Social Gallery, even with ZBS CRM, like it was to launch early. So we launched sooner than we thought. So the first like Social Gallery version just had like a Facebook like and a Facebook comment. And then we built on the back of that after like listening to customers. So we got the first version out. It may be, if we'd waited until we like had I don't know if Instagram existed when we first did that, but if we had like the Pinterest buttons and all the other social share icons, we wouldn't have launched. And so we just got a version one out and then started listening to what people were asking us for going forwards. And that was true to ZBS CRM as well, was the first version was very much like a lot fewer features. And we decided to listen to customers, talking to customers and just trying to get the word out. So with Social Gallery, the thing that made that the sales pick up on that one was a partnership with, I don't know if you remember Next Gen Gallery, all those years back. So we got like a blog post on there and integrated with Next Gen so that if you clicked on a Next Gen Gallery image, it would pop up in the Social Gallery. So that type of partnerships and not treating everyone as a competitor, and because everyone's in it together to sort of make the web a better place. That was the way we went there, was just doing that type of stuff. But I agree, it is getting harder, like with more plugins, with AI, like making it, you can just talk to an editor and have it create a plugin. Like that's a real challenge for like new people starting out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's we actually just had that experience last week. And that was unique because they're like, oh, I talked to AI and I had this plugin made. Can you add it to my site? And I'm super hesitant. Like, and I'm sure a lot of other people are going to face this coming, right? Like where people are going to say, oh, I made this. Because if you're in charge of the site and the maintenance and the hosting, and now you're just going to add something that AI made, that's a little freakish. So then you say, well, maybe we need to check it out first, or maybe we need to look at your code. But then if you're going to do that, you might as well charge them to make a plugin, right? So do you have any thoughts on that? It wasn't the original question, but we kind of opened that can of worms right there.
We did. And I think that'll happen. It's sort of like how, if you're getting AI to sort of be your AI engineer in a new product, then still have somebody that understands the code, like to check it's still secure, check it's not doing anything, like allowing any like privileges, escalations and things like that. I always pick the hard words to try and get out of my mouth. So I think that like, as long as you have someone that understands the code, depending on the size of the plugin, then that could be part of a new service, is like have an AI engineering team and then offer the service to like get this production ready. But I think as AI gets better, it's looking at a lot everyone's code anyway that's open source, and there'll be fewer instances of these type of potential issues. So, and it'll just move faster with bigger context windows and lots of ways to just make it easier to build a plugin. And then that circles back to like what makes a plugin successful. Is it the idea? Is it the distribution? Is it the marketing? Is it the person, like the team behind it?
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked when you said not considering people competitors. I have a favorite saying that I stole from somebody else. And it was, you don't have to worry about someone getting your piece of the pie because you can always just bake more pie, you know?
Yeah.
Jonathan, over to you.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Don't know where it's going to go, really. Well, I'm part of a professional level Facebook training community, and I was in one of their premier Zooms yesterday, run by John Loomer, and people were there discussing what Mark Zuckerberg has been saying lately, that Facebook or Meta are going to, you know, clearly saying that they really want to cut out most of the agencies, the lower end agencies, and provide an AI service that really can basically a small business client can say what result they want and what adverts they want to run, then the AI just manages the whole thing, and that's his vision. So it'd just be interesting to see what happens. So one of the questions, because you, by looking at your previous interviews and your background, you seem to be one of these individuals that have broad abilities, i.e. you're in the world of marketing, online marketing. You also have some technical abilities as well. So you've got like a broad span of insights. And I listen to quite a lot of a major influencer online. I don't agree with everything this person says, Scott Galloway. But on a few of his interviews and some of his own podcasts, he's been saying that he really sees the world of traditional branding dying. And I just thought your own thoughts, but because I think I can see where he's coming from, and in some ways I think it's already happened. But on the other hand, I think more around community and being foreign online influencers, which is a form of branding, is it not? Seems to have still growing, and there still seems to be a need for more of it from the consumers. What's your own thoughts about all this, Mike?
Yeah, this was the question that gave me the most, kept me awake most at night, was like, is brand building still important? And I think if you look at some of the older brands in WordPress, like Jetpack's one of the first major brands that came out, and people either love it or hate it. And the people that hated it back in the early days hated it for a particular reason that may not be true anymore. And you'll have heard of these before, like it's bloated, it slows down websites. But then if you look at what's the shift where we did individual plugins, that's moving away now that it's actually speeds up your website with Jetpack Boost. There's lots of things there. So that brand building, I think, is still important. And it becomes like brand building, brand perception, and even for company brand. But then also alongside that is now I think it's more important stuff like personal brands as well. So like for yourself, if you're growing WP Tonic, then to look at the person behind that and like what has Jonathan done? Like what's he been involved in? Has he been to communities? Has he done speaking, like engagements and things like that? So I think personal brand is as important as business brands. But I do think brand building is like, and brand marketing is still important as well from all sorts of brands, whether it be WordPress. And Matt tweeted a few days ago, like, asking for agencies that could help elevate the WordPress brand. And like the biggest example I could give very recently in my mind of like the brand side is the BYD car. So I'd never heard of BYD. And it was only when we were looking for a new car and we saw like it as part of Mercedes, we're like, oh, what's this? But then we started looking into it, and they've done all the brand marketing. They've got all the influencers talking about it, doing reviews, and like, doing like the high BYD assistant showing the screen, and it's got all the tech. And then you look at the even deeper down like the rabbit hole, it's like it's now overtaken Tesla in revenue and it's sold more EV vehicles. And I don't think that would have happened if they hadn't have done that brand building over like in particular where they originated from. So I don't think it's dead. I think it's just shifting that brand building will be easier with AI again. Like you can talk to various AI agents to help you like know what to do next if you're stuck with how you get your brand to the next level. If you've got your brand perception in a particular place that you want to change, then how do you go ahead of doing that? So hopefully that answers the question.
Well, it was a very broad question, and you really had a... I'm sorry to hear that I made you not sleep, actually, Mike. My own view about it is I think in the Pacific, obviously Scott, when he was a leading consultant to very large brands and companies, the example he gave, the broad example, was taking a mediocre product and then using mass marketing and mass branding to get a premier margin on a semi-mediocre product. And I think he's right about it. The gist of it was that taking quite mediocre products and marketing them sophisticated and getting a much better margin than if you didn't do that. And the marketing was at such a lower rate that you still got an enormous payback. But I think that is probably dying and was dying because you could just go on TikTok, you could just go on YouTube, you can just go on 1,000 different platforms and read reviews and what people are saying. Obviously, a lot of those reviews are being manipulated by sponsorship and by other factors, but it's much harder. So there really has to be a lot more behind the brand than just marketing. There has to be some real value in the brand. But the idea that just, I've known loads of WordPress products that were really good, but the people never did any marketing and had no marketing strategy, and they never went anywhere. So what do you think about what I've just laid out? Do you think I'm on the right track, or do you disagree?
I don't disagree. One of my favourite sayings is, you can put lipstick on a pig and it's still a pig at the end of the day. Like, no matter what you do to it, if it doesn't have product market fit, then it's going to be harder to get those customers and things like that. So, on the flip side, there's the good products that don't get the traction. I think it depends on the people behind it and if they are comfortable marketing, comfortable talking to customers. Because I think it all goes back to what does the customer want at the end of the day. So, are you building your products based on like a demand, and then going from that, or are you thinking, trying to drum up that demand for a product that might seem like a good product, but like there's not that customer demand and customers aren't asking for it? So back to the social gallery example, it was people were asking for it. We didn't just think, are we just going to copy Facebook? There were people saying, I want this functionality on my WordPress website. And it was the same with CRM. It was, again, a number of people that were using it saying, I want to see everything in one place in my website. I'm spending all my days like going out quoting for building services, and I don't have time to essentially learn this complicated software. So we made a very easy version in WordPress. And it's that listening to customers and talking to customers, and then that word of mouth marketing that I think some engineers potentially don't like the marketing side of things. They just like to move on to the next feature and build the next thing and put the next plugin out.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Kurt?
Marketing is an elusive ghost for me. I get lost in it myself. I can think of two examples where I might not necessarily like the technique, but it's obviously paid off for them. You know, and I'll pull some big names out. Like I bought a Grant Cardone book a couple of years ago, probably 4 or 5 years ago. No matter what I'll do, I'll never get off that man's email list. Him and his team of salespeople, you know, it's emails every week and all that stuff, and it's super annoying. And I think that's from a developer's perspective, or someone that's marketing a new product, I think they have that fear of, I don't want to be that person that everybody hates, right? For trying to be pushy for something they don't want. But you nailed it when you said, you know, product market fit. Like when the product fits the market and it's a no-brainer, like, yeah, that's awesome. But it's still, I think Jonathan and I personally have spoken to many people that had good product market fit, but still didn't have growth. almost like they put too much into making the cool product and not enough into the marketing. And it's, I think nowadays it is really confusing for most people right now to go, okay, I built this really cool thing, or I am building this really cool thing. How do I get everyone to know about it? Even if I have product market fit, I'm not able to get the eyes that I need to get. Your example was the car. Here in the United States last week, a truck was announced called Slate. And it's a $20,000 EV, like a mini truck. And it's super, super cool. Like for 20 grand, it's amazing. But I knew nothing about it until last week. And then it was everywhere on X. And a bunch of people started talking about it. And then I didn't hear anything this week. You know, but they made a giant investment, a giant splash in influencers and gross posting. And maybe that's just what it takes. Maybe you just have to really commit to it and really spend the money to get those eyeballs on it and then see if it works.
The reason I'm bringing in this up, Mike, because obviously were you the founder or the joint founder of Zero BS CRM?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we were. Go ahead. I was going to say it was me and What If, the same person that did Social Gallery with. So it just spans backwards. But
now, I don't know too much about this. Obviously, you sold it to Automattic in 2019. The things that we've been discussing in this first half, what do you think anything that we discuss on reflection applies to Zero BS? And if so, what were some of the lessons you could share with the audience around your journey with this particular product?
Sure. Yeah. So again, ZBS, when we launched it, there was periods where it made hardly any sales, like very early on. And there's points where this isn't going to work. Nobody wants it. And then we saw the thing that sort of moved people to buy in was we had like five extensions at the time, and we were sort of looking at the WooCommerce model and the easy digital downloads type of extension model. And we said, well, let's do some bundles. And when we put the bundles in place, that then started to slowly tick up. But we did also around that time, a period of just sponsoring WordCamps. And we went out to all sorts of WordCamp Nepal about digit to successful products when we were still relatively low, and just sort of trying to sponsor WordCamps, trying to just speak, I went to a number of local WordCamps and spoke to agencies and gave out business cards, all the type of stuff that is it was out of my comfort zone at the time, was just going and trying to network with people to say, look, it's a new product, maybe give it a go, it's completely free. Because the search volume in WordPress on WordPress.org for CRM was relatively low. And even now, there's more CRMs now than there were. And if you compare it to the install counts of Contact Form 7, none of the CRM products are that massively adopted in Word, WordPress native. But it has grown from maybe the less than 10 installs that you get on a new plugin that's the TikTok 200 or the Instagram 200 jail, where you can never get past that number of views. But it did slowly start to pick up, and we got to about 1,000 active installs at the time of the acquisition. And then since then, we're up at about 30,000 now. So we've gone up a big jump since joining Automattic. So I think we could have, if we didn't join Automattic, would it have been different? Would we have stayed low? It's really hard to tell. But I think the early things again was just going out and networking and guest posts again, we did with the Social Gallery and Next Gen. We did a few, we spent probably about $500 at the time, which was a lot for us, of just guest posts to try and get on WP Mayor at the time and WP Cube, all of these, I don't know if you remember all of these websites back then, but we spent a big chunk of our money at the time to try and just get some search engine juice coming in. And I think that probably helped as well. So, but this is 10 years ago now, that when we first, almost 10 years ago. So things have changed in the world of, the AI and the AI snippets, which is what we're covering as well.
So how long was you running this particular product before you sold it to Automattic?
So we started working on it in 2016, and then we officially launched in June 2017. And then when we started to see sales pick up, we incorporated as a separate company in October 2017. And then we got acquired in the acquisition discussions probably started around February 2019. It was quite a quick acquisition process when we got to there. So all in, probably about 3 years of that, from idea to being acquired.
Right, that's fantastic. We're going to go for our midway break. We've got a couple of messages from our major sponsors, and we'll be back in a few moments.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back. We've had a feast of knowledge from Mike. He seems quite relaxed. It hasn't been too painful, I don't think. But it's been a great discussion so far. I just want to point out that if you're looking for a great hosting provider, much more a real partner in really building out membership, community websites, or any big project, why don't you have a look at what WP Tonic's got to offer? We are much more than a hosting provider. We are a true partner. You can find more by going over to wp-tonic.com/partners, wp-tonic.com/partners. And if you've got any additional question, you can always have a chat with me. What more could you ask for? Over to you,
a mauler.
Anything. He'll pay me not to have a chat with me. He's got to the stage. He thinks, should I pick the phone up?
This next question, it's almost like we're just extending the conversation from the first half of the show, but I think it's a little more specific. And that is, someone's new, right? So we talked about, you know, how did you market this? How did you market that? But someone's new. So have you got any insights on brand new WordPress or SaaS product? Like, how does someone get that traction? We talked about product market fit, and then we mentioned a couple of like outlying cases where people just, you know, like really doubled down on social stuff. But bare tactics, right? You've made your WordPress plugin or your SaaS product. How do you just get that first bit of momentum and get going?
It's hard. It's like, if you want to do that, like, be ready for like maybe a year of nothing. I don't know. Maybe that's a little bit pessimistic, but like, don't be expecting to get like thousands and thousands of users like as soon as you put your first post out. It took me quite a while with, but when I did it with plugins, we were quite fortunate that, and Code Canyon at the time was a decent marketplace.
Yeah.
But since like Envato Elements and all things like that started coming out, and I've got a post on my Epic Plugins blog about like the fall of Code Canyon. I didn't title it that, but it was an open letter to Envato that actually ranked higher on Google than when you search Code Canyon than Code Canyon did. So that was quite an interesting piece where it's like, it's not the same as it was. And even Product Hunt launches, I've got another post on Epic Plugins where I sort of looked at how I got ZBS featured. And there's a lot of work there to sort of, I was tweeting Nia AL, who at the time, who's the author of Hooked and Indistractable. And I'm just like, I've just read your book. This is great. I've just launched this product. So we did a lot of things around like the teachings from your book in this product. So I'd love it if you could give it a retweet. And he did. So that, like, I'm like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. And he popped over and he upvoted it on Product Hunt at the time as well. So I think starting out like that, you have to try things like that, like things that don't scale. Do a lot of manual, like one-to-ones. If you get people using the product, say, look, I'll spend an hour with you just to make sure you can understand it and I can understand the sort of pain points that you're hitting.
Yeah.
And just, so I was quite fortunate that I had a bit of a, I had the money coming in from Cold Canyon, but then I was also freelancing as well and building WordPress websites and talking to people at the same time and then pushing my solutions as well at the same time. Because it's like, this person needed a gallery. I'm like, well, why don't you use this social gallery? I can get you, like, I'll give it you for 50% off or things like that. So that was quite a nice way of doing it. And even in the early days of CRM, it was a similar tactic where we'd sort of listen to customers and they'd have a particular idea. And we're like, well, we can work with you on a freelance basis on that. And then that money then helped us put it into like the wider marketing budget that we had to try and grow the actual products. So we used to do a thing where we'd say, like, it's a great feature, but it's very specific to your use case, but more people might be interested. So why don't we knock 50% off the development costs and then we'll launch it into the bundle and then you don't have to pay for any maintenance or anything going forward. So that it was sort of like a nice way that they got what they wanted, but it also enhanced the product at the same time. So I think if you're just trying to do a product without anything else sort of backing you up, it's going to be a lonely road. But if you can sort of try and, like, if you're building websites, if you're doing other things that you could also, like, talk to people about your product as well, that would be a way to get it going. So that would be my advice there.
I wanted to jump in with a follow-up question on that. How many people do you think that develop a product get nervous or second guess the price and start hacking away at the price as the possible solution rather than realizing they failed at the hard work of promotion?
Probably a lot. I think we probably underpriced CRM at the time, like when we first launched it, and it's still like a really good deal now. If you look at CRMs, it's $200 a year for access to everything. And like, I think even now that's probably, we could increase those prices. We've not increased them for years because it's, I think you got it dead on. Like, I think you mess around with the price thinking that's the problem, and it's more like the distribution, it's the talking to people, it's the adding the extra thing, potentially adding the features, or is it just getting that tweet from like an influencer to help lift your brand? But yeah. And then you can always change prices later if you...
Another price-related question would be, what are your thoughts on the freemium example? Like, hey, here's a core piece for free, and then it does these extra six things for $200 a year.
That's pretty much the only pricing model I tend to use for most of the products we've done. So ZBS was slightly different, but it was a core. So we sort of framed it like WordPress itself. Like, there's the core CRM with all the plugins that you could add on. But then most of my other stuff, like, we always had a light version and a paid version. And so that's a nice distribution that people can use the free version and then they can upgrade for some extra stuff. So with Social Gallery, the upgrade was you got a few more like sharing buttons and you also got like a standard page on your website for each image, which we called like a social gallery page, which then helped sharing on like social networks. Because if you shared just an image URL, it didn't like do all the rich text that you would get, like the title, the description, the image. And so that those were like the very basic things you could add on to Social Gallery. So I think that works well because you can get the free version out there and most people will try free and then they can start to unlock it. And I think it can work quite well, depending, as long as it's not just like your free version is just a demo and you can't do anything.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks. I appreciate Jonathan?
Yeah, I'd like to go back to your thoughts about Zero BS, because obviously in the end it had a pretty good outcome for you. It's it's enabled you to build your relationship and career with Automattic. So in the end, it's had a good outcome. But do you think I'm right about this statement? I see CRMs a bit like the term managed hosting. It's become a diluted term to the level where nobody really knows precisely what it means. And what I mean by this, Mike, is a CRM. A CRM can be like Salesforce, vary about the management of sales teams, smallish or medium or large, and with a manager, very sales orientated with around details about customers. And then you can have a CRM that's very marketing orientated around landing pages and triggering marketing automation. And then you can have a CRM that's even bigger on that. And there's been companies that are built like Salesforce, other ones that built multi-million dollar companies on CRM, the term CRM. And then you've got products like Zolo CRM. It's all over the place. As you have been so frank, you did build it and it was moving forward. And obviously, Automattic could see some real benefits by buying it. But do you think what I've outlined about, you know, I've never used it. So maybe you can, where would you pitch what you were trying to do with it and what it did in what I've outlined? And I like your thoughts about what I've outlined. Do you think I'm right that it's one of the problems in trying to get traction in a CRM? Is it organizational, or is it really a term around getting leads, getting actual customers? Because it's a very broad church, isn't it?
Yeah. Welcome to the last 10 years of my life, Jonathan.
Yeah, oh, so I'll get by your response. So I was quite right about this thing.
Yeah, so I've known my wife for 10 years, and even now she's like, what the hell do you do? I'm like, CRM. And she's like, what is that? So I think that's the challenge, is it's such a wide term. And even when people, like, we probably get, I don't know, this is probably being, again, lowballing the numbers, but at least a couple of feature requests a week for CRM. And a lot of them aren't CRM, like, and it's so wide ranging that they just, like, they want it to do like employee leave management. They want it to do performance reviews. Like, that's not a CRM. So a lot of it is like people are trying to grow the business. When you think of like the outcome of a product is what it was trying to do with this solution. And we went with CRM because, like, we wanted a way for leads to become customers. So that's like the main thing. It's like you have your website, you've got a form, you want a lead, and you want to then convert that to a customer if you can, if you do that. So I think that was the thing.
It's only the first time I've interrupted you during this interview.
No, it's
because I'm trying to cut down interrupting. So really, you were more into, and I like your response, you are more in the area of what Fluent CRM does. Is that correct?
Not quite, no. So Fluent's very much marketing or automation side of things, whereas we were essentially aimed more at like the small businesses and the people trying to like get out of the spreadsheets, get out of like the thousands of notes on your desk, right, and just say like, get yourself organized, get the data you want from your forms into your CRM.
So more like Zolo, maybe.
Zolo? Do you mean Zoho?
Pardon?
Yeah. Zolo. Zoho. Zoho.
Yeah, Zoho. Sorry, it's my pronunciation. Zoho CRM.
So probably similar. So we've always been quotes, invoices, contacts. So sort of trying to get like the plumbers, the roofers, the every person CRM to help people not rely on spreadsheets and start using everything in one place. So you don't need to sign into all these different tools, that it's all in a central location. So there's different businesses. So again, all these CRMs, they are targeting different use cases. So we've just seen a comment come in.
I'm sorry, that was me. I didn't mean to distract you guys.
Oh, no, it's...
Sometimes I put notes in for the audience.
I was boring Mark anyway. I'm only kidding. Over to you, Kurt, for the next question.
Well, I'm like a SweetDash user because I signed up for a lifetime. I'm a sucker for a lifetime deal. And so I use that for years. But then when I was studying your product, I mean, it does invoicing and interacts with WooCommerce and stuff like that. So I see it more like manages customers, but project management, invoicing, proposals. It's more like a SweetDash solution for WordPress, which to me is super interesting.
It is. But you can see the problem with this. Like I say, I think Mike agrees with me, and I love you for doing that, Mike, because most of the guests don't. And I don't blame them, but it is a very difficult, because manage hosting, it's such a diluted term. So you've got to spend so much energy trying to explain and positioning precisely which area of this very diluted broad picture that you're going to plant your flag in. And that can be frustrating. Sorry I interrupted, Kirk, but I've been a good boy. I've been a good boy, haven't I?
You have. Let's just jump on, right? So we've mentioned AI a ton, right? So... Mm-hmm. So give up the goods, Mike. What are the tools or services that you use on a regular basis? It's got to be more than just ChatGPT, right?
It is. Yep. So I use quite a lot of AI and coding editors now. So I still tinker around with learning different AI tools, and things like N8N is quite a nice one to sort of get your workflows running. I've been using ClientBots, which is quite good for... It's another VS Code extension that you can choose which model that you use out of lots of different ones. So it's not just the cursor basic and things like that. So I use that quite a lot for things like thinking around programmatic SEO and things like that. It's been quite useful to talk to, I'll talk to ChatGPT on one side and say, this is what I'm thinking. And then I'll give the output from ChatGPT into the editor and say, okay, I'm trying to grow my personal brand. So what things could I look at? So you're both in the US. If you were to open up Google and search best newsletters, then I'm actually somehow started to rank number one for best newsletters on my personal website because of this experiment with programmatic SEO. So I don't know how I've done that, but that was very much AI driven around how do I use this to help me with content and personal brand building and that type of thing. So I use ChatGPT for that. I've used Jetpack AI since that came out, just to help me structure outlines to articles as well, and then start creating them. I did use the image generation of Jetpack AI very early on when it was DALL-E, and that was quite painful to try and get it to do any images with the right things, but that's starting to move on. I do use ChatGPT to literally as my little imposter syndrome therapist sometimes when I'm feeling
I'm not Kirk for that. So he laughs at you. Kirk still laughs at my... I can be quite amusing, Kirk. I might be bonkers, but I am amusing, aren't I?
It is.
Not all the time, though, am I? No.
And then the other thing we've just been trying recently with, because my wife runs a travel business, so, and she's had me build when I was on sabbatical last in June from Automatic. I said, I'll help you get your WordPress website out. And then, so we did it. And I was like, I don't like it anymore. So I'm like, right, I don't have time to build you a whole new thing. So
the boss has spoken.
Spoken, yeah. Well, she's got the idea. So
sabbatical, like a web project.
Yeah, so I'm the CTO of her travel business. I'm like, I didn't sign up for this. I said, give the WordPress.com AI builder a try, because you can chat with it, you can do all the images and things, and you can learn a little bit as you do it, because she is a complete beginner. So she's been really enjoying that side of things. But I say they're the main things with AI that I use. for now anyway. I am wanting to experiment with HeyGen, if you've ever heard of HeyGen for doing like videos and like tutorials and things. So I tried it a while back and it was eerie in that like the person wasn't breathing. So when it did like a decent video, you're just like, I can't watch myself because it was just like the body was still, but the head was moving. So I think that's moved on a bit now as models are getting better.
It sounds like a paintbike.
Yeah. Well, we're actually talking to an AI the whole time.
I think a lot of the audience would want that actually, but there we go. All right, let's move on because
you're it, Jonathan.
So if you had your own time machine or TARDIS, Doctor Who, I'm showing my age, and you could go back to the beginning of your career and just have a quick 5-minute chat with yourself, and there was like one little tip, insight you would like to share. Is there anything that comes to your mind, Mike, apart from not coming on this podcast?
No, this has been good. Because my career has been like split into two, I'm going to probably say two little tips. So my first one would be like, don't commute to work if you can help it. Like, because that has been like, that's since I left, I've been working remotely since 2016. We spent 2017 and 18 traveling the world on a honeymoon, just working from everywhere. And like, thinking back to it, like when I was working in an office, I would probably spend sometimes 3 hours a day sat in a car. And to think over the period, that's a lot of time. And it's a lot of money in like petrol as well. There were no, so that would be my first thing.
That's gas for our American mortals. When I go back to the UK to see my family, they think I speak American now. I got told off by my older sister when I started using terms like gas and other terms. She said, what the hell are you saying? Yeah, but I think I'm still very English, actually. So it's commuting. It's keeping away from the commuting. That's the main thing.
Yeah, so that'd be one tip. And then so back to like how American have you become. Do you say aluminium still? Or do you say aluminum?
Oh, aluminium. I can't even pronounce aluminium. I do have a speech, I was going to say defect. So I have, I have a slight problem around that on certain words, but I could be very fluent in other words, as Kirk will say. I think it's time to wrap up the podcast. Are you up for another 10 minutes or do you have to clear off?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
All right, because Kurt's got a hard deadline. He's got to go off and run another online forum or whatever. So we're going to end the podcast. So, Mike, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and what you're up to?
Sure. So I say probably the easiest way, you can just find me on Twitter. So it's at mikes.wp. And then my website is just mikes.me. So it's nice and easy to find. Or you can Google best newsletters and get there that way.
Will be. And Kurt, what's the best way for people to find out more about you, what you're up to and your latest thoughts?
I keep seeing people say, find me on X and I agree, I'm there, but my main thing is LinkedIn. I'm the only Kurt Von Annen on LinkedIn, so you know you got me.
You got him there. It's been a great show. We're going to have some bonus content, which you'll be able to watch the whole podcast and the bonus content on the WP Tonic YouTube channel. It's rapidly growing. I'm going to, hopefully in the next month or 2 months, get up to 10,000 subscribers. Love you to join there and watch the bonus content as well. And think by subscribing to the YouTube channel, you are supporting WP Tonic and this podcast. And we would appreciate that. We will be back next week with another great interview. We've got some fabulous guests. I'm fully booked up till July. And we've got some fantastic people like Mike coming on the show. We will be back next week. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.